Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome. Thanks for joining. My name is Matthew. Today, we're going to continue building out the money supply for the United States, and we're going to look at sight deposits. And for those of you in the Western world, you probably know that as the demand deposit or the checking account. All right, so here we go. We're going to continue to build out the money supply for the United States. That is the total money supply that is calculated typically by the central bank. As I mentioned yesterday, this is a process that in its modern form began in the 50s and 60s at the Federal Reserve. Other central banks have followed, and this is generally how things are counted up in aggregate, the monetary aggregates, they're called. Yesterday, we talked about the physical cash, the cash and coin, the physical currency that you know as the dollar, the greenback. Today, we're going to introduce, for the first time, a fiduciary component of the money supply. And when I say fiduciary, that sounds perhaps like a daunting term, but all that I mean there is the bank component, a bank deposit. So as you probably use most every day, a bank card, a credit card, a debit card. There's actually some nuance to credit cards, but we'll save that for a later episode. If you use online banking, if you use banking on your phone, mobile banking, obviously that is done not with pieces of paper. It's done digitally, and it's done through a fiduciary. That is, it's done via a bank. And so we're going to talk about the main component, the main type of account that you can hold with a bank today, and that is the sight deposit. Now, the sight deposit is the classical economic term for it. As I mentioned in the intro, if you live in the Western world, you probably know this as either the demand deposit or the checkable deposit, the checking account. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But before we get there, let's go ahead and look at this curve. What is this? It's highlighted here. Cash inside banks. So yesterday we showed you the percentage of cash that was held outside of banks in grocery store tills, cash registers, under mattresses, in safes, privately in the economy, outside of fiduciary systems, outside of any banks. And you might remember the percentages for the vast majority of it. You were looking at 90%+, sometimes 95% of all cash was outside of the banking system. This picture right here, this graph, is the opposite of that. This is that 5%, sometimes 10%. I'm not going to show the ratio here, but the very, very small proportion of physical cash and coin that is held inside of banks. And as always, we do real world examples here. This is inside the banks of the United States. This also includes thrifts, credit unions, institutions of that nature. These are entities that basically need a banking charter, a banking license to operate from the Central Bank of the United States. And of course, this is only in the modern era. We're still on the remnants of a gold standard here in the 60s. But pretty much from here, we're on a pure fiat standard where the Central Bank issues and manages the core basic monetary base money supply. A component of the monetary base as well is this. That is physical cash and coin that exists in banks. Now let's just look at the number. We have here January 1959, $3.2 billion of physical cash and coin was inside United States banks, inside the fiduciary. Let's go all the way to today, $89 billion. And that's down from the COVID years. We peaked a little bit over $105 billion in May of 2020 with physical cash and coin in banks. You also notice this little jump right here. What was this? This was Y2K. This was Y2K. I've mentioned this in prior videos. We had a bump here because people were concerned about the Y2K bug, the Unix bug, so-called bug that would bring the entire financial system to a screeching, crashing halt in 1999. So a lot of people took cash out. Now, relative to cash that's typically in banks, okay, it was close to double. You see, it's about $74 billion here. Whereas a few months before, in 1999, $40 billion, so not even double. So it's a lot for the time, but compared to even now, and if you compare it to all the financial assets in the system, even then, tens of trillions of dollars here. Tens of trillions of dollars. It's nothing. It's a drop in the bucket. So it was a relatively small amount of people who thought the need to take cash out. I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong to do that, but it was empirically a small, small proportion of people that actually took cash out relative to the rest of the assets in the financial system. And then that leads me to just sort of concluding how much cash is there really here compared to the financial system. A very, very small amount. A very, very small amount. You probably know this, but just if you see a number like $100 billion in cash, it might sound like a lot. It's certainly more than any, actually not more than some individuals are worth in total today. But of course, if you count up some of those individuals, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, the vast, vast majority of their wealth is not tied up at all in physical cash. It's represented primarily by the success of their companies that they started. So it's represented by stock. And company stock is a completely, completely different thing than we're showing here, which is base money, the core physical sort of traditional thing that you understand that a central bank produces, whether you know it or not. Are those green pieces of paper in the United States, different colors in other countries. That is base money. And here is just a portion of that, a very, very small portion. Remember, 90%+ circulates outside of banks. Here, at any given time, 5 to 10% of it is inside of banks. That means literally inside those fancy big doors and fancy bank vaults. This is the amount. Okay? So this is cash in bank vaults. This is basic money that actually exists inside banks, and it's an asset on the bank's balance sheets. It's an asset for them. Final last thing just to point out again, you can still see the seasonality here, even to modern times. We have at the end of the year, after the harvest, which is the traditional basis of the seasonality, people demand cash. And whether it's holding that cash in banks or banks having it ready for people to withdraw the cash, you see these spikes here in December and January in particular as people start to deposit them into banks, you know, Christmas holiday gifts, so on and so forth. The spikes of physical cash when banks need to be ready to deal with cash, it's always at the end of the year. This is the seasonality of cash. All right, so that is physical cash, and that is how much physical cash is held in real time here in the United States in bank vaults. Right now, there's about $92 billion worth of physical cash and coin across all banks in the U.S. Now, remember, we are building out a money supply here for the United States, not just physical cash, but digital cash, ledger cash, fiduciary cash. We're going to do it step by step, video by video. Yesterday was the first video. This is the second video on this process. So now we're going to introduce for the first time this thing that I called at the beginning of the video, a sight deposit or a demand deposit or a checkable deposit. We're going to look at all of the demand deposits that existed across all banks, credit unions, thrifts in the modern era since basically the 60s. And this is counted up by the Federal Reserve. Here it is in black. Boom. And you see that the axis changed tremendously here. So now we're looking at trillions, thousands of billions. Remember, before here, when we were just looking at cash in bank vaults, max $100 billion. We put this back on, demand deposits. Now we're looking at thousands of billions of dollars. And the green vault cash becomes a very, very small number compared to this demand deposit number. See that it grew quite fast after the global financial crisis. And again, this is just intro explanatory videos as far as analyzing the trends, the multiples, the ratios. We'll do more of that in future videos, but we're just looking right now at how it looks. Real world example here. And we go after the global financial crisis, a much faster clip of demand deposits. And then we come all the way here to April of 2020, just when COVID was starting to to mess up a lot of things and to make people very scared, and governments were really starting their stimulus packages here. The end of April 2020, we have demand deposits at nearly $3 trillion, nearly $3,000 billion worth of demand deposits in the United States. And then it stops. This number stops. Vault cash goes on. I still know that number, but I don't know this number. Now, this has confused a lot of people that sort of casually Monday morning quarterback sort of look at money supplies, don't actually read the notes, don't actually read how this stuff's calculated. The Federal Reserve basically stopped calculating this number right here. Unfortunately for us, unfortunately for people that really want to try to understand the money supply, educate about the money supply, and maybe even make investment decisions based on the money supply, the Fed, as they have done with prior money supplies, which I will get to in future videos, they have claimed here that they didn't have enough resources and that they did not find it as valuable because of some legal changes to keep calculating this number. Now, very quickly, what are those legal changes? Regulation D, which basically describes the difference between a checking account and a savings account in the United States, that sort of fell off. It changed. It was no longer required to have banks treat a savings account differently from a checking account. So technically, a savings account now, from May 2020, is the same as a checking account. If you have a savings account, you can make as many transactions per month as you want, just like a checking account, so on and so forth. But this, of course, is not helpful for prior understanding of history. It still would be good to show the difference. I mean, a bank can still treat a checking account differently from a savings account, regardless of what the regulations say. Nonetheless, our wise overlords at the Federal Reserve chose to not publish this information anymore, unfortunately for us. I have a workaround. It's not great, but it is a workaround, which I'll show you here in a second. Nonetheless, you see that just before COVID, the demand deposit number spiked up here. It was in December, it was December 2019, $2.3 trillion, and then we were at basically $3 trillion right as they stopped publishing this number. And of course, this is catching some initial government stimulus checks, bailouts, so on and so forth. So that's it. That is the demand deposit number. You see, it's not as smooth. It's not as seasonal. It doesn't look as consistent as physical cash. But nonetheless, that's what it is. And one more thing I want to say about this as well. Even though we have a central bank in the United States, even though we have lots of banking regulations, even though you and I watching this video, I'm sure you and I watching this video, and unless it's Jamie Dimon, which I doubt because he's not a fan of, you know, this type of analysis nor Bitcoin, you and I just can't go out and start a bank. We just can't, unfortunately. Banking regulations in the United States and all around the world are extremely strict, extremely, extremely strict, perhaps too strict. And they claim, the establishment, the politics of it all, they claim that not anybody should be allowed to just go start a bank. We can't have a free market in banking, a purely free market. So we have to regulate the heck out of banking. So even though, all I want to say is that even though we have a highly, highly regulated banking industry, this black line is much more free market than the green shaded area here. Even though this seems like they might know what they're doing, this is a state-backed, state basic money system. And if we add this on, this is more of a free market, of a market-based monetary supply. So if people demand, literally demand to have demand deposits, they demand checking accounts, banks will offer them to the people as best they can. And of course, regulations grow generally every year, so it becomes harder and harder for free banking. We have more entrenched interests, all of that, but I don't want to get too much into that. Nonetheless, this black line still is more of a free market money supply than the green line. Now, back to trying to make a curve for future videos and understand this stuff a little bit better with demand deposits. We don't have a number, a clean number, printed by the Federal Reserve anymore here. Why? first, they say rule change is not necessary. Second, their resources are limited, which I always find it's funny when they use the resources are limited excuse for the agency that actually prints money. I just find that quite interesting, but that is an excuse that they use. So even though we have these problems to deal with, as far as if we want to try to understand the money supply, we want to understand how the macro system works, notice on the tooltip here, you see that it says gross OCD and net CIPC, or net CIPC. What are those things? Well, that means that this black line, as I have shown it here, it includes all demand deposits. It also includes something called other checkable deposits, which actually is a different series entirely. It's not that large, generally a couple hundred billion. It's usually at credit unions, thrifts, smaller banks. It's just a different money supply. They like to count it separately than traditional banking demand deposits. Nonetheless, I have put them all together here in this black line. So that's OCD, not the other acronym you might know psychologically, but this is other checkable deposits, and it is included in this black line. It's also net CIPC, net CIPC. And what is that? Cash items in the process of collection. Cash items in the process of collection. So when banks around America report their demand deposits to the central bank, the central bank is actually the only entity in America that has the full picture. It sees all the different reportings, all the different requirements of reserves and all so on and so forth from every bank. And so it can see if one bank is perhaps double counting a demand deposit where they're about to lose it because someone's, you know, requested a withdrawal from another bank, but this bank hasn't seen it yet. The Federal Reserve does see that faster, quicker, system-wide than any one bank. So basically, the long short of it is there's a little bit of double counting if you don't net out CIPC, that is cash in the process, or cash-like items in the process of collection. So you need to net that out, and the Federal Reserve does that, and that is done here in this nice black line. And I just want to read you here how CIPC is described by the central bank. So here it is. In order to avoid double counting those deposits that are simultaneously on the books of two depository institutions, the demand deposit component of M1 excludes cash items in the process of collection, or CIPC, and Federal Reserve float. So it's basically, as I said, two banks at any one time could say that they have demand deposits on the books, but actually maybe one person in the one bank is going to request money to go from their bank to the other bank, and so that deposit is going to leave one bank and go to another. And so to avoid any of the double counting, the Federal Reserve nets out CIPC or CIPC. And that is all reflected in this black line. Unfortunately, as I said, from May 2020, with lots of things going on in the world, in the financial world, the Federal Reserve changed a lot of things, and they decided to stop publishing numbers that could get you to this black line. A side note, they actually did in fact keep publishing this, but just in an absurd manner. And really, a lot of people online who casually look at this didn't have any idea that they did that. So this number, even though they didn't make the correct calculations and reporting anymore internally, the Federal Reserve, they still showed, if you really dug into it, you would see this number jump from, say, $3 trillion to like $14 trillion, over $10 trillion. Because again, Regulation D, all the rest, they said they don't want to parse through the numbers anymore. They're just going to basically throw in all of the deposits, savings accounts included, to give you a number, which, again, it's not comparable at all with the past. So it's not even appropriate to show it. I'm not even going to show it to confuse you, dear viewer. Hopefully this is not confusing as it is, and you understand some of what's going on here. Anyway, there is one number that they still do publish, and that is the demand deposit number of banks across America. Now, unfortunately, as you see here, gross OCD and net CIPC for the black line, it's the opposite for the number I'm about to show you. The number I'm about to show you is net OCD. It's net other checkable deposits. It does not include checkable deposits, all right, which is a smallish number, but it's still, you know, it's still part of the demand deposit stack. So demand deposits, site deposits, checkable deposits at thrifts, some credit unions, some of those they don't publish anymore, the Federal Reserve. And it's also going to be gross SIPC. So there is going to be some double counting. There is going to be some banks that think they have a demand deposit at the same time other banks think they have the same demand deposit, even though there's about to be a transaction. It's going to be gross SIPC. So it's actually the opposite. So the blue line that I'm about to draw here, it's going to be close, but not perfect. And there it is. And you see here, I've continued the trend so we can see. The important thing is to at least see the trend. We do see the trend, and this is real. It absolutely keeps exploding here as COVID stimulus checks circulate throughout the economy from the Treasury, lots of stimulus, so on and so forth. But we can see right here when we have both indicators, what's the difference? It's about $1 trillion. It's $900 billion. So this is unfortunate, but this is the best data that the Federal Reserve publishes where I can kind of get a past sense of what the numbers used to be and then the future sense of what the numbers still are. Again, the Federal Reserve, they are choosing to just lump in now all savings accounts, all savings deposits with checking deposits, which is totally nonsensical for historical analysis. Even if regulations change, banks can still deal with savings deposits differently than checkable deposits. Again, so it's just, they're not putting in the work. They're not helpful for the economy. It's very not helpful for society to see this. Their job is to promote transparency in the economy beyond, of course, controlling inflation and unemployment, as is their dual mandate. So it's unfortunate that the Federal Reserve has decided to cancel this statistic. And as I will show you in future videos, this is not the first time that they have done this. So we have to work around the numbers that they give us, and that is going to be this blue line. And this is the number that I'm going to use for demand deposits in the future, even though there's going to be some double counting, and even though this does not actually even include other checkable deposits from some thrifts and credit unions. I just want to zoom in somewhere in the past. You see that, you know, you never quite know where it's going to be. It's very hard to even apply a ratio here. Like if I would say, okay, maybe it's 10% higher, 20% higher. No, because if you look here in the 80s and the 90s, the gross number, which is my blue line, is actually below the net number. That's just the way it works out. All right. Other checkable deposits were probably higher here in the 80s and 90s. In fact, this was during the savings and loan crisis. So I haven't looked at it, but I presume this is some of the savings and loan crisis where there's an expansion of savings and loan balance sheets beyond perhaps the value of the assets of those SNLs, what they should be. So that's probably why this black line is higher at this point. There's no pure scientific way, of course, I can just say like, okay, you know, I'll try to continue the black line by removing, netting out $1 trillion. You can't do it. So this is the best that I can do. It's important to have because it shows us the trend of demand deposits, and it is indeed all demand deposits. It's just, unfortunately, some double-counted demand deposits. That's what it is. So once we have that, and I'm gonna now take off the black line, okay, just to avoid confusion. Once we have this number, I know it's not perfect, but it does give us a current COVID time number and trend line that's consistent with a past pre-COVID and pre any sort of draconian mindless changes that the Federal Reserve has done. We have this trend that is consistent. We can now compare this number with this number. Actual vault cash that banks have with the actual amount of deposits. That is the amount of bank accounts around the entire United States. If everybody wanted to go at once and withdraw their cash, how much could they withdraw? Well, they could only withdraw what's in the green area, the actual vault cash, the actual cash and coin that's in bank vaults. As you can see, the number gets lower every year as a proportion. What is that proportion? Let's draw it now. This is going to be on the right axis. Here it is. This is vault cash in cents. Cents on the dollar, cents per $1 of outstanding deposit. All right, and this is the dotted line. Here it is. Okay, so you look to the right now for the dotted line, how many cents are there in vault cash per every dollar of demand deposits? About 5 cents. Sometimes 4 cents. Even back here in the 50s, 2 cents. 2 cents in vault cash per every dollar of demand deposits outstanding. You see here that it was much higher at Y2K, went up to 8 cents. And remember, let's put this back on. The actual, there's some double counting again from this point. So the actual demand deposits system-wide was lower, means the percentage would be higher. It would be, instead of 8 cents, it would be about 12 cents. So there's a discrepancy here, but again, the reason I have to use the blue line is to be consistent with the past, with going forward, because they don't publish this data anymore, unfortunately. It still gives you the trend. It still gives you the trend, even though the percentage might be a little different. This is the biggest difference you see here in the last 20 years. It's actually much closer in before that, before the 90s. So let's take the black line off again, the discontinued version again. So these are all the demand deposits, the site deposits outstanding in the United States today, roughly. All right. And what is the number? We got $7.3 trillion. And as a percent, how much cash is actually in the vault? One penny. So to be clear, what this is saying here, we have demand deposits, checking accounts, outstanding, the solid blue line, roughly. We have vault cash inside banks, inside those fancy bank vaults. Demand deposits of $7.3 trillion, actual physical vault cash of $92 billion. And then we have this ratio, the dotted line. To be clear, what it's saying is, if every single person in the United States with a checking account today went to their banks and tried to withdraw their aggregate $7.3 trillion worth of checking account deposits, they would only get 1 cent on the dollar. 99 cents worth of this money, this broader money supply money, the demand deposit account balance value, 99% does not exist in physical cash form. Now, I hasten to go to the next step here, because you probably think that what I'm about to say next is, it's all a scam, the system's going to fall apart, this is untenable. It's actually not where I'm going at all. I just want to illustrate here how the ratio has been over the last 60 years, which, as we can see, it's been as low as one penny on the dollar of demand deposits outstanding. It's been as high as 8 cents, though, as we know, if we had the real number on here, it would be close to 12 cents. All right, because the real number is a little bit lower. Nonetheless, again, I have to keep the numbers consistent here. That's why I'm using this adjusted figure. Roughly, from one penny on the dollar to 10 cents on the dollar, and 10 cents would be a good day. But it's been as low as one penny. This seems to be a very, very low figure. Typically, 2, 3, 4 cents. So it's not out of the ordinary that this ratio exists. And from here, this would drive us further into the quicksand topic of fractional reserve banking. I use the word quicksand. That's what my buddy, my former co-host Fernando Ulrich likes to say. Fractional reserve banking, that is how the modern banking system works. If there's only one penny's worth of cash in bank vaults, but there are 99 cents more of deposit claims on these banks outstanding, where is the rest of that money? This is where a lot of the monetary fantasies come in, and people like to say that somehow this money doesn't exist, or it's a fraud, so on and so forth. Of course, the money does exist, it just doesn't exist in the form of physical currency. Where does it exist? Primarily in the form of a bank loan. So the bank here has 100 pennies of liability to its depositors, that's $7.3 trillion. It only has one penny of assets of physical cash if everybody came to withdraw the cash at the same time, a bank run. Only one penny. But that doesn't mean it doesn't have 99 other pennies of assets somewhere else. And where are those assets? Primarily in the loans that they make. That's what banks do. They make loans. So there's house loans, consumer credit loans, credit card loans, so on and so forth. There are bonds that they own from governments. Banks around the country and around the world have a lot of other assets on their balance sheets besides vault cash. And in fact, vault cash has always, not just in these tough economic times, but always, always been a minority of the banking system's balance sheet items. Vault cash only representing 1, 2, 3, 4% of all demand deposit claims outstanding. And we will review these concepts in future videos, but for now, in the interest of time, this video is already much longer than I wanted it to be, I'd just like you to take my word for it. This general ratio of a few pennies on the dollar of vault cash in banks versus how many deposit claims there are outstanding will exist in a monopolistic system with a fiat standard. That's what you see here. It will exist in a monopolistic system with a gold standard. You see a little bit of that here. Even though we don't have a classical gold standard, we still have a dollar exchange standard where the central banks could claim their gold back from the United States if they wished, and they did, the French in particular here in the 1970s, in the 1960s. But if we go back even further to monopolistic systems, that is, a system with a central bank, under a gold standard, whether it's a Danish banking system, Swedish banking system, Scottish banking system, British pound sterling banking system, where there's a gold and silver standard, and there always has been prior to 1971, always, with modern banking systems, you're still going to see this ratio. And that is when you're not just looking at physical, let me take it off here, you're not just looking at physical greenback notes here that are backing the deposits, you'd actually be looking at gold or silver coins, and it would be the same ratio. It would be the same ratio here of just a few pennies on the dollar or the pound or the kroner. So you'd have that in the monopolistic system with a gold standard as well. And you would even have it in the final third system I'm going to mention here, which is the free banking system with a gold standard. Again, there was always a gold standard. So even in the absence of a central bank, even in the absence of a system with a central bank, which primarily happened a few hundred years ago in Sweden and Scotland, and even until the 1930s in Canada, even in a system with the absence of a central bank, you will also still see this type of a ratio. Just a few pennies on the dollar of base money in the vaults, and that can be gold, silver, or in the modern fiat standard, it can be actual just fiat cash banknotes that are printed by the Federal Reserve. That's still part of base money. It can be any one of those things in a system with a central bank or without a central bank, you're still going to see this similar type of a ratio. And I hasten to say as well, I do think, like the great Hal Finney, one of the early adopters of Bitcoin, received the first Bitcoin transaction from Satoshi Nakamoto. He also speculated in around this time, 2010 here, that we would have a Bitcoin banking system where there would be a Bitcoin type of a standard. Bitcoins would be floating around as the base money in the system. But as far as making payments and when people might want to withdraw their Bitcoin, that ratio as well is probably going to be pretty small to the total portion of outstanding demand deposits in the system. We already see that today. There are already plenty of deposits in exchanges all around the world, which represent in totality more than the amount of Bitcoin. How much that is, we'll get to it. You already see it today, but the point is, we'll get there, we'll see what happens with Bitcoin, but even in a fiat system, as you see most of the time here, even in a gold monopolistic system, as you see a little bit here in the 60s, even back to the free banking systems based on gold or silver, this is a very similar ratio of vault cash to total deposits outstanding. People simply prefer to have their money in the bank. They prefer to have banking services, many of which are free, and or to collect interest. And the bank themselves, they do match this liability, right? This blue line here is a liability. The green area, which is very, very small, is an asset for the banks. They do match that gap, which is a 99-cent gap in liabilities here. They do match that, of course, with other assets, What are those assets? They are the loans that the bank makes. All right, that was way too long of a crash course on demand deposits. I didn't want to make it that long. Unfortunately, we have changes here in the history, as you see. I'm trying to map it all out and make it simple for you. As well, we have this very, very interesting vault cash ratio to demand deposits, which is very small, just a few pennies, just a few pennies. This is how it is today. This is how it's always been. I just want to give you this overview of banking. Thanks a lot for joining. See you soon. We'll continue the exploration of the money supply of the United States.